On a Monday, you're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Republican State Senator Luther Olson of Ripon on the line. He plans to retire after 26 years in the legislature, and he announced early this year he will not seek re-election in November. So we're looking back on his work with a focus on schools. Olson chairs the Senate Committee on Education and is a vice chair for the Joint Finance Committee, the legislature's state budget writing committee. He served a decade in the assembly and has been reelected to the Senate since 2004. What questions do you have for State Senator Olson? What do you want to know about his work in politics or his upcoming retirement? We're at 800-642-1234. Senator Olson, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. It's good to be with you this morning.
Well, let's start with schools, something very close to you. Schools across the state are, you know, they have all sorts of plans for the fall. Some are in person, others starting virtually. Some are trying a hybrid approach, a combination of both these things. What is the best option?
Well, the best option educationally is to get them back in the classroom. Now, that probably isn't the best option for spreading COVID-19. And so I think what schools are doing, and I think they're doing the right thing, is every school district is looking at how do they handle it in their school district, different than their neighbors or large urban districts, small rural districts. So I think the best way is to get them back, but that's not the safest.
Should the state require all public schools to be held in-person instruction?
No, I don't think so, and I'm glad the governor is not going down that road. We're a local control state, and to require them to be face-to-face just, to me, seems a foolish venue and something that we should not and I don't think will do.
Well, looking at the relief aid going to schools, Wisconsin is part of a multi-state lawsuit against Education Secretary Betsy DeVos over millions of dollars of coronavirus relief funds sent to private schools. How do you feel the education aid should be distributed?
Well, I honestly think that in the world we live in today, it should be spread around to all children going to any type of school, because really, as the state, we are responsible for K-12 education. We fund both systems now, and we have to make sure that no matter where you go, you get the education that you need. And so it's a new system. It's a new way of thinking, but I think that we have to make sure that all the boys and girls in this state get the best education they can, and that's getting more and more difficult with the challenges of the virus.
Well, under the CARES Act, relief funds were set to be distributed based on the percentage of low-income students in schools. Is that the right formula?
Probably. Although there's all kinds of formulas to do it. So I guess the question is the right one? It's the one they've picked. I'm not sure that it's not the only way they could do it. They could do it per student in a district. But if they decide that they're, you know, and they've decided that they're going to go with low income, that can work, and it will work.
We're talking with Republican State Senator Luther Olson, who plans to retire after more than two decades in the legislature. You can join in. What questions do you have for the state senator? What do you want to know about his work in politics? What do you want to ask him in our exit interview? Do you live in the central part of the state? Why have you voted for State Senator Olson over the years? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's look at the mask situation. Do you support Governor Evers' statewide order requiring people to wear masks indoors?
Well, I wish he wouldn't have done that, but, you know, it's working. A lot of stores and places of, you know, worship and whatever have said, we are requiring you to wear a mask unless you, you know, medically can't. So it's working, and I was out and about this last weekend and around the state, and we were riding our motorcycles and stopped to get gas or use the restrooms, and everybody was going in, pretty much everybody was going into the convenience stores having their mask on. And so people have accepted it, but, you know, people just don't like the government to force you to do anything. And that's where the shoe gets tight. But a lot of people are saying, as much as we don't like it, we're going to do it. But then there's some folks who are just saying, heck no, I'm not doing it. And I think that's a small number, but I just don't at this time see the legislature changing that order.
Should the legislature vote to lift the order?
Well, I guess we should, but I still think people are going to wear masks. And the question really is the government, and it's legal, it's sort of a legal situation. Does he have the authority to say that this is another emergency order dealing with, you know, the same one that we dealt with before? So, but I just don't see we're gonna do it.
Well, let's circle back to education with Mike joining us from Slinger this morning. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, my question is, just a few minutes ago, you mentioned the public funding of private schools, which is, of course, Betsy DeVos's baby. I don't understand why public schools, tax dollars, should be spent on private for-profit schools. And as we all know, many of these for-profit schools are part of chains that are actually listed on the New York Stock Exchange. This has become a big, big business. And for my tax dollars to support Betsy DeVos's companies against public schools just does not seem a realistic or a good idea.
State Senator Olson, you can go ahead and respond.
Sure. You know, if you think about it, your tax money goes to private businesses. You know, they have the PPP money that goes to a lot of private businesses to keep them in business. There's lots of aid that goes to private businesses, especially right now. So whether it's a private school or your local small business downtown, your money is going to private institutions. One is educating kids and one is selling goods on Main Street or producing widgets in a factory. So this is really nothing new for the federal government to give private industry, whatever it is, money.
Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer said the pandemic has shined a light on the inequities in the public school system. How prepared are schools to handle the pandemic going forward?
Well, that is the big thing that I've been talking about in the last few months now, 6 months almost, because we have talked about equity in education for a long, long time. And really, that goal is getting harder and harder to reach because, you know, when you have kids that are having to do virtual learning, some don't have broadband, some their parents are working and the kids don't have guidance to do virtual education. Or if they do, parents get frustrated because they're realizing that how difficult teaching kids is. And so we see that happening. And at the same time, we see parents that are just really delving into this, helping their kids, you know, do thrive with virtual learning and things like this. So I see the achievement gap getting wider and wider all the time.
Talking with State Senator Luther Olson of Ripon. We'll be back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking with longtime Republican State Senator Luther Olson. He is set to retire after 16 years in the Senate, serving the 14th district covering South Central Wisconsin, stretching from Columbia County to Wapaka County and including the Dells. What are the biggest challenges in this part of the state in the years to come? How have you seen the Republican Party evolve over time? What should be the party's top priorities? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. And State Senator Luther Olson stays with us. We heard President Trump issued executive action over the weekend. And among the actions the order provides is a $400 weekly enhanced unemployment benefits, with states picking up $100 of that weekly aid. How do you feel about the president's move?
Well, I guess nothing was happening. And so, you know, Congress just couldn't agree on a package, which is sad. That seems to be happening more and more and more. So, you know, as you mentioned, the president said, okay, I'm going to do an executive order. And I'm not sure that he has the authority to spend taxpayer funds. But I guess if you're unemployed and you need the money, it can happen unless somebody sues and it stops happening. So as far as the state budgets are stretched, we're going to be, I believe, shortfall. So this just really adds to our funds. But I think that a way that will happen is that $100 will come out of the unemployment fund, which was pretty healthy. Now, I don't know how long that can last, but what's interesting is the way that works when the funds get low is we borrow money from the federal government, and then when things turn around, then we just pay it back. So I don't think it's really going to hurt our general purpose revenue budget. It'll just be an increase in the expense of the unemployment insurance.
Our state's unemployment system hasn't been able to keep up with the applications as it stands. How quickly could it shift to a new allocation formula and then providing those resources to pay for the additional benefit?
That's a $64,000 question. I do not know how fast they can switch, but I know that they've hired a lot more people to work in unemployment. You know, the system was never designed to have as many people claiming unemployment as now. And so it was unrealistic to think that we would have a system in place that could handle all those, because that's a lot of people that probably wouldn't have much to do if they were there all the time. So ginning it up and getting it going is what was needed. The problem is it's taken, I think, too long, and I feel bad for people who call us who have been trying to get unemployment for months and not being able to get it, and especially when they've used their reserves and having trouble paying their rent and buying food and things like that. So it's a typical government situation where it does not respond that fast when you have to deal with issues like that. And it never has, and it probably never will.
We're discussing state politics with Republican State Senator Luther Olson from Ripon, who plans to retire, not running for re-election in November. Taking your questions at 800-642-1234. You've raised concerns about President Trump's conduct in office and that him being a poor role model. Do your concerns go far enough that you would vote for Vice President Joe Biden in November, or would you not vote at all?
I just say I'm not voting for Joe Biden.
Okay. You don't want to elaborate further on what you do for November?
Well, I'm pretty positive I'll vote for the president, because as much as I don't like his tweeting and some of the things he says, a lot of the things he says, at least he is making decisions that I think need to be made. And in reality, if you think about it, this pandemic was not his doing. Could he have done better? Yeah, maybe. But most of the things that he did was talk, where the states were really in the forefront, and that's where the action was. I know that, you know, when it first started, he got people from coming in from China, and everybody was all upset about that. But at the end of the day, that was a very smart thing to do. And the sad thing is we have become so politicized in our country that no matter what he does or says, you know, a bunch of people don't like it, and they're not shy about voicing their opinion. And there's out here, I see a huge silent majority that are not so much silent anymore. I see more Trump signs and flags and banners than I've ever seen before for a president. So it's going to be really interesting this fall to see what happens.
Your hometown is known as the birthplace of the Republican Party, and voters have historically elected Republicans in the area. What priorities would you hope for in your successor?
Well, I think right now, I mean, it used to be the biggest thing we had problem. One of the big problems we had was having enough employees for the growing businesses in the district and in the state. That was one of the big things. Now, of course, it's the pandemic. And how do you get the economy going? How do you get this thing under control? And, you know, my district isn't going to come up with the vaccination, but the question is, how do we make sure that businesses can survive so that when it's over or under control, whatever happens, they're in a position to be in business? Or if they're not, how is it easy that somebody else can take their place in that void? So that, to me, that's one of the biggest issues that I see that whoever wins the Senate seat will have to deal with.
What do you hope the GOP prioritizes in the future?
Well, I think the education, for one of them, I've always felt that. That's sort of where I have been in my career in the Assembly and in the Senate. That's, I think, job number one, because if we don't have an educated workforce for the changing jobs that we're having, then I don't see us having a good economic future. I think that we have to make sure that businesses survive and flourish so that they can hire folks. I think we want to make it easy for people to get into business, entrepreneurs to get into business so they can start business and grow the economy. Because if we don't have a healthy economy, then we don't have tax money to help pay for schools and run government. So I think those are some of the big issues that the Republican Party has to deal with.
Let's bring in Don now, joining us from Madison. Hi, Don.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well. What's your question, or what would you like to add?
Well, my question to Senator Olson is this. How do you justify voting for the lame duck laws that reduced Governor Evers' powers after having 8 years or 6 years of Scott Walker with the same powers?
Well, you know, what's interesting is I was very concerned when we were giving Governor Walker those powers. In fact, I'd bring up in caucus, I said, guys, just realize that he's not going to be governor forever, and we're giving away powers that we should not give away. And at the end of the day, we decided, yeah, maybe that was not the smartest thing, and we should rein those things back. And so I think that we have checks and balances. And at the end of the day, I think the state is doing well with the changes that we made. And so I think that's what it was. We gave away a lot of stuff because we were comfortable with the governor and we were on the same page. But once you're not on the same page as the governor, then you better make sure that you have the powers that you're supposed to have and get them back.
Matt from Wausau emailed us this morning, and Matt says Act 10 did more to undermine the educational system of Wisconsin than anything else. And next year is the 10-year anniversary of Act 10. Senator Olson, how do you feel about it?
Well, I don't agree with that undermined education, because if you look at what's going on, you know, before the pandemic, our schools were doing well. Challenges, of course, all the time because we have students who come that are more poverty, English language learners, more mental health issues, more special ed issues. The challenges are always there. But when I talk to school superintendents and how they're running their schools, they were saying, if we wouldn't have done that, we would have really not been able to, we'd had to downsize because the money wasn't there and we needed to make some changes. It was painful for everyone, of course, but at the end of the day, it wasn't, this terrible thing that just ruined education in the state of Wisconsin.
State Senator, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. My pleasure. And have a good week.
You too. And get on that Harley. Luther Olson is a Republican state senator from Ripon. He represents a South Central Wisconsin district, plans to retire after 26 years in the legislature. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Attorney General Josh Call. We'll discuss the governor's authority to issue a statewide mask order and other things. We'll be back for more State Cap after this news update on the Ideas Network. On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Attorney General Josh Call on the line to discuss a range of issues amid the pandemic, including his efforts to promote safe and secure absentee and in-person voting as vice chair of Vote Safe Wisconsin. We'll start, though, with Governor Evers' face mask emergency order from July 30th and the conflict over its enforcement. What do you think of the governor's statewide order requiring masks indoors? Is the order within the governor's authority, or is it an overreach? We're at 800-642-1234. Josh Call is Attorney General of Wisconsin. Attorney General Call, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
It's good to be back.
Well, you support Governor Evers issuing a statewide order requiring masks in certain places. Why do you do that? Why support this statewide order?
Well, there's evidence that mask wearing can help us reduce the number of cases of COVID-19. And that's critical that we do that for a variety of reasons. There's the obvious public health benefit to reducing the number of cases. But by reducing the number of cases, we can also help to reopen our economy faster. So this is good for business in the state of Wisconsin and good for jobs. And, you know, there's been a big debate about school reopening. And the more that we can get cases down, the more effective we can be in getting schools as open as possible. So there are a lot of good reasons to do this. And there aren't really any good reasons not to move forward with this. So I'm a strong supporter of this mandate.
Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald says the order was written in such a way that exposes him to legal challenges. Do you agree with that?
Well, it's certainly possible that there will be challenges, but I would note two things. First, the governor has very broad emergency powers under Wisconsin law, and that's the authority that he used to issue this order. And I don't think anybody can debate that we're in an emergency situation with a global pandemic that is continuing to have a huge impact on communities in Wisconsin and around the country. And then secondly, if the legislature wants to undo that emergency declaration, they can meet and pass a joint resolution that does that. That would be harmful to the health of Wisconsinites, to our economy, and it would be a really bad precedent to set, but that's an option that the legislature has.
Let's bring in Logan in Green Bay with thoughts on masks. Hi, Logan.
Hi, thank you. What I wanted to say, politics is playing a part, yes. It's a case of cutting off your nose to spite your face. Evidence has shown that mask wearing does play a role in preventing the spread. And look at the staggering number. 5 million and people are engaging in politics.
And so Logan, thank you, Logan. So Logan is saying, you know, that he is certainly behind a statewide mask order and not to politicize it.
Well, we shouldn't be politicizing it. This is a public health matter. And, you know, the reality is the public overwhelmingly supports this mandate and they overwhelmingly support mask wearing in general. It's among politicians where we have seen a debate about this, but this is something that has strong public support, and the reason is because it is good for health. It's good for our economy, and so this is a positive development. I'm glad that the governor issued this order.
Kelly in Cascade. Good morning, Kelly.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Yes, I work in healthcare, and I'm very happy about the mandate. I've been wearing a mask out in public since the beginning of the pandemic. I wear it to protect other people. I feel more confident going out now knowing that other people are wearing it because it's a little safer for me as well. And this should not be considered an infringement upon people's rights or freedom. This is really a measure to just keep each other safe.
Kelly,
so
thanks.
I support it.
Yeah. Kelly, thanks for your insights, especially from healthcare. Let's bring in Mark in New Berlin. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thank you. See, I've been wearing a mask when I'm out in public, and I'm wondering, will I be allowed to go into the polling place and vote on the 11th wearing my mask? Because my mask has the name of a politician who's running for president on it.
Mark, thank you for that call. Attorney General, you know, what about mask wearing in tomorrow's partisan primary?
The Election Commission sets the rules for, you know, how that works. Generally speaking, there are restrictions on electioneering within a certain distance of a polling place. But I know that there are accommodations being made to make sure that people are able to wear masks when they're going to vote, and that there's a specific exemption to the mask rule if that needs to somebody needs to bring their mask down so that an identity can be confirmed. So I would suggest that people contact their local clerk if they have questions about how that works. But I'm also glad to hear the healthcare perspective on this, because one of the reasons it's so critical that people wear masks and that we work to drive down the number of coronavirus cases is people in the healthcare profession are on the front lines of this as our first responders. And by taking steps to keep ourselves and others safe, we're doing a lot to help protect the safety of those first responders as well.
You and former Republican Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen are leading a coalition focused on absentee voting and safe in-person voting. What are your goals there?
One of the goals is to raise awareness about the safe and secure voting system that we have in place in Wisconsin. Wisconsin has safe and secure absentee voting, and if people choose to use that method of voting, we want to make sure that people realize that they can do so safely and securely. And we also want to encourage there to be a lot of safe in-person voting locations so that voters who want to vote in person have the ability to do that. We don't think that anybody in Wisconsin should have to choose between the right to vote and putting their health at risk. And so one of the things that can help with that is early planning, which I know that election administrators across the state are doing, but also receiving some funds from the federal government to support the efforts that election administrators around the state are doing can help make sure that our elections are safe.
Is the Justice Department, the state Justice Department, involved in any investigations involving election security at this moment?
We coordinate with other law enforcement agencies to make sure that we're monitoring potential threats to our elections, as well as other potential threats to the security of individuals in the states. And that has been going on and will continue going on. Also, if we become aware of potential criminal activity, that's something we potentially could investigate. And so if that comes to our attention, either through a complaint that's made to the Elections Commission that makes its way to us, or through other means, we are available to assist, making sure that people are able to vote in a safe and secure fashion, but also that people don't have their rights to vote interfered with illegally is critical for this election.
We're talking with State Attorney General Josh Call. You can join in with your questions. What do you think should be the top priorities of the State Justice Department? What do you think of Governor Evers' statewide order on masks? How will you be voting for tomorrow's partisan primary election or later this fall in the general election? Will you be voting by mail, absentee, or at the polls? We're at 800-642-1234. Should Wisconsin switch to mail-only elections like Colorado or Washington, or do you feel like the current system is going to work?
Well, I'm glad that voters in Wisconsin have options, and I think that we should be able to expect a safe and secure voting practice in this election. You know, the election that we saw in early April was only weeks after the pandemic really hit the United States, and people were scrambling to adjust to that. Election administrators were. There was a very large influx of absentee voting requests. These are different circumstances now. Now we have time to prepare. We know that there are going to be a large number of absentee ballots requested. And we know that the process is going to take a little bit more time on Election Day and potentially even the days that follow than we've seen in the past. But we are able now to get those ballots out early. We have time to prepare. And we also have time to prepare to make sure that there are sufficient polling places in communities around the state and that they have the protocols in place that can keep people safe there.
Let's switch to schools reopening. Where do you fall on whether schools should be open, closed, or something in between this fall?
I agree with the approach that the governor's taken in terms of having that decision made community by community. The circumstances that different communities face fairly widely. In some places, having distancing in classes is much more feasible than others based on class size and overall school size. And in some parts of the state, transmission of the virus is a lot more widespread than others. But I think that we've got to take an approach that listens to science and public health on this issue. And, you know, we need to make sure we're not putting our kids at risk here. This is a serious virus, and we've seen the impacts that it has. And just moving forward without thinking carefully about it, I think, would be a mistake. What we can do in the meantime is do everything we can to drive down case numbers, including having people wear masks, making sure we're socially distancing, making sure that people are washing their hands, so that the odds that an outbreak happens are reduced.
And in terms of schools getting funding to be able to reopen, where do you see Wisconsin schools in that realm?
Well, I think schools are going to need more funding than they typically do because of the virus. They're going to have to make adjustments that wouldn't have been budgeted before anybody knew this pandemic was coming. One of the things we're doing at Wisconsin Department of Justice is we're part of a suit that is trying to prevent funds that were intended to go to public schools in Wisconsin to help respond to the coronavirus outbreak, to prevent them from being diverted away from public schools so that those critical funds get to our schools. But this is another area where it's critical that the federal government step up. I was really disappointed to see last week that there was an apparent breakdown in negotiations about further federal legislation.
Well, we have to pause there with Attorney General Josh Call. We'll be back with him in just a moment on the Ideas Network. It's a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation now with Attorney General Josh Call. We were talking there about Wisconsin being part of a multi-state lawsuit against Education Secretary Betsy DeVos over millions of dollars of coronavirus relief funds sent to private schools. Attorney General, why is Wisconsin a part of this suit?
There are a few different reasons. One is this suit is diverting millions of dollars away from public schools in Wisconsin. And as we were just discussing before the break, it's critical that schools have those funds so they can respond effectively to the virus. In addition, that's what the statute here says. And so this is about making sure that Secretary DeVos follows the law that's in place. And it's important to note that public schools and private schools are in a very different position when it comes to getting funding to respond to the pandemic, because private schools were able to apply for PPP loans, and many did. Public schools didn't have that option. And so diverting funds away from those schools, I think, is harmful to Wisconsin schools and to our communities.
What would it mean to Wisconsin? How much money would be diverted in Wisconsin with the interim rule?
It would depend on exactly how the new numbers are calculated, but we believe it would be a little over $4 million would be diverted away from public schools in Wisconsin.
Let's take another call now. Kay is with us from La Crosse. Hi, Kay.
Good morning. First, I'll say that I'm glad we have a mask mandate, and I hope that it stays in place. The reason I'm calling is in response to an earlier caller who was wondering if he would be able to vote on Tuesday wearing a mask. And I work at the polls, and yes, you can wear a mask when you vote. The state standard is that your face needs to reasonably resemble your ID, and we can usually distinguish that when a person's wearing a mask. He pointed out that he has a mask that has the name of a candidate on it. And I would just say to him and to everybody, please don't do that. That's electioneering in the polling place. We all know that that's not right, not that it's not right, that's against the law. Don't wear T-shirts, buttons, masks that have the name of a candidate on them. That it's not right. Don't do it. You're potentially setting up some kind of a challenge with poll workers or with other citizens in your area. Don't do it. Put a bandana over that mask. Wear a different mask. Wear a bandana instead of the mask. Don't wear things that promote a candidate
Kay,
at the polling place.
Kay, thank you for that. And while you're on the line, do you have enough poll workers in La Crosse?
To the best of my knowledge, I'm not the person who staffs the polling places. I'm just a person who works there.
Well, Kay, thank you for the call. And Attorney General, I want to ask you, if the legislature would vote down the emergency order, would that affect the governor's ability to use the National Guard at polling places, to use the National Guard for testing centers or other services?
It would have a number of very negative effects on our ability to respond to the pandemic. By getting rid of the emergency order, which is what the legislature would do if it were to take action with respect to the mask mandate, that would not only end the mask mandate, but it would impact the governor's ability to issue other emergency orders and to take other steps that can be taken during an emergency. And one of the things that he is doing with that emergency authority, and which, again, I fully support, is using the National Guard to make sure the polling places in Wisconsin are adequately staffed.
Let's go to James now, joining us from Kimberly this morning. Hi, James.
Hello. Thanks for having me on the air. My question is in response to Senator Call, how he said that with the in response to the schools closing and not having in-school teaching, he said it's got to look at the science part of it. But there's more than that. You got these parents who across the country aren't going to be able to work, so there's a financial part of it too. They're not going to be able to work because they have to stay at home to help teach their kids or be at home with their kids because their kids can't stay at home alone because the schools aren't opening. So now they have to choose from supporting their family and becoming financially stable and being at home now to stay with the kids because of these schools closed. And my question is, what's this Wisconsin state government going to do for these parents that are now going to be out of work because they have to stay at home to be with their kids because the schools aren't open?
James, thank you. Attorney General Josh Call, the economic consequences.
Yeah, I appreciate that question. One of the things that we need to make sure we're doing effectively in responding to this virus is, of course, working to reduce the number of cases and protect public health. But we've also got to make sure we are taking steps to protect people's financial security. This virus has had a huge impact on unemployment. We've seen the numbers go up dramatically. It's impacted the number of people who are using food share. Those numbers have gone up. It's had huge child care impacts, as you just heard about. And to respond to that, we need effective and aggressive government action right now. Now, at the state level, we are not able to run a deficit, but the federal government can, and it's able right now to borrow money at an extremely low interest rate. So what we need is for the federal government really to step up and provide significant relief in the short term for people while we are working to get case numbers down so that we can get through this current period of having even more of an enormous financial disruption than we are having, and so that we can focus on getting the virus numbers down. When it comes to schools, I agree with that concern about childcare. The problem is that schools reopen and then there's an outbreak. The schools are going to close down again, and we're going to have a serious health problem on top of that. So that's why we've got to make sure that if schools are opening, we're doing it safely.
I want to turn our attention to federal agents in Milwaukee. After President Trump announced the deployment of federal agents to Milwaukee, you said the president was employing fascist tactics. What do you mean by that?
I've been deeply concerned by what we've seen from the White House in Washington, D.C., where there was a concentrated attack on peaceful protesters. We've also seen Department of Homeland Security officials who are not identified in Portland who are engaging with protesters. And we've got an administration that we have seen repeated acts of xenophobia and racism from. And so the tactics that we have seen from this White House are fascist tactics. And so when the announcement came out that federal agents were going to be sent to Milwaukee, that's something that concerned me and I know concerned a lot of others in that context. So we've been in communication with the U.S. attorney in Milwaukee because my view is that if what we're talking about are additional investigators to help reduce violent crime, to investigate serious crimes, and also to work to prevent violent crime from happening, that's a good thing for Milwaukee. It's a good thing for Wisconsin. But if we're seeing something like what we saw in Portland, where federal agents are being sent in to try to prevent protests from happening, that's something that I'd be very concerned about. Now, fortunately, what we've heard from the U.S. Attorney's Office is that these are going to be investigators who are focused on targeting significant crime. That's consistent with what we've seen so far. And so hopefully
the number of homicides in Milwaukee is up substantially this year from last. What is the State Department of Justice doing to assist local authorities to curb the uptick?
That's right. We work closely with local law enforcement agencies and with federal law enforcement agencies. And as I said, if the resources coming to Wisconsin are intended to go after violent crime and large-scale criminal activity, that's a good thing for the state of Wisconsin, and we are happy to work with federal agents to do that. And that appears to be the way this is going. What would not help with fighting violent crime anywhere is to have federal agents set in to try to suppress peaceful protesting. Again, that looks like that's not what's happening here, and that's a positive development.
Would you take legal action if federal agents would interfere with peaceful protests in Milwaukee?
If they were violating people's constitutional rights or they were acting beyond their authority under federal law, we would take action against them just as we would against anybody else who was breaking the law.
Attorney General, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Josh Call is Attorney General of Wisconsin, took office in January of 2019. If you missed any part of our conversation on the state cap, you can stream it later today at WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead, a pediatrician explains how the coronavirus affects children as some schools chart out a return to in-person instruction in the fall. Parents, lend a hand. If your child wants to ask the doctor a question, the number is 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.